Hi, I'm Jackie Roble with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. During the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information from the Nutrition Action Health Letter online. Nutrition Action Health Letter is the flagship publication of the Center for Science and the Public Interest. Published 10 times a year, Nutrition Action provides honest, unbiased, science-based advice on nutrition and health. It's the world's largest circulation nutrition newsletter, bringing the latest nutrition news and advice to more than 500,000 readers. Nutrition Action is totally free of advertising, so we're free to blow the whistle on products that aren't what they pretend to be and to applaud the good ones. Please use this information presented in the broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. The following articles are from the July edition of Nutrition Action Health Letter on the web at nutritionaction.com. How Larger Portions Influence Later Choices, by Caitlin Dow. Have oversized servings in restaurants distorted our view of what's normal? In a new study, scientists randomly assigned 277 people to be served a lunch with either a larger, 440-calorie, or smaller, 220-calorie portion of quiche. The next day, the participants were told to serve themselves a portion from a full, family-sized quiche. The researchers pretended that the study had some other purpose. People who had gotten the larger serving on day one served themselves a larger portion on day two. What's more, they also chose a larger serving when asked to identify a normal portion of quiche that day or a week later. What to do? Think twice before you eat everything a restaurant serves you. Odds are you'd feel full with less. Confused about what portion of a given food should look like? Check out our handy guide online at nutritionaction.com. Pepperidge Farm Goldfish Crackers and More Recalled for Potential Salmonella Risk, by Lindsay Moyer. All of the recalls linked to a whey powder ingredient. Check your cupboards. Pepperidge Farm on Monday announced a voluntary recall of four varieties of goldfish crackers distributed throughout the United States. No illnesses have been reported. The company was notified by one of its ingredient suppliers that whey powder contained in a seasoning in the crackers may be contaminated with salmonella, which can cause serious and sometimes fatal infections in young children, older adults, and others with weakened immune systems, says the FDA. Healthy people infected with salmonella often have fever, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, and abdominal pain. Pepperidge Farm's recall applies to four varieties of goldfish: Flavor Blasted Extra Cheddar, Flavor Blasted Sour Cream and Onion, Goldfish Baked with Whole Grain Extra Cheddar, and Goldfish Fish Mix Extra Cheddar Plus Pretzel, that carry the UPC codes and sell-by dates indicated in the manufacturer's chart. Have one of these packages at home? Don't eat it. Throw it out, return it to the store where you bought it for a refund, or request a reimbursement from the manufacturer. Flowers Food Inc. has recalled various brands of Swiss rolls and Captain John Dirt's old-fashioned bread for potential salmonella contamination. Likewise, Mondelez has recalled certain Ritz cracker sandwiches and Ritz Bits products. Have You Been Tricked by These Foods? By Jolene Mathness. Food companies can't seem to help themselves. It must be so, tempting to stretch the truth, even just a tad. So what if consumers are misled? The clues are almost always there if people study the fine print or the ingredient list. Corporate lawyers don't get paid for nothing. Here's a sampling of labels that use clever tricks and marketing ploys to make foods sound healthier than they are. Nothing but the what? Real pressed fruit, say the nothing but the fruit boxes. Picked, pureed, and pressed. So there's only pressed raspberry in the raspberry chia and pressed strawberry in the strawberry real fruit bites? Turns out that they're mostly apple puree concentrate and grape juice concentrate. That's why the small print says naturally flavored with other natural flavors. Nothing but the truth? Well, sorta. Cookie Con. 16 grams protein per cookie, brags Lenny and Larry's The Complete Cookie. Whether you go with chocolate chip, peanut butter, or another flavor, you get, quote, baked nutrition, says the label. 8 grams fiber per cookie. No eggs, no dairy, no soy, non-GMO, vegan. Since when does adding protein, pea isolate, brown rice, and wheat gluten, and processed fiber make a cookie nutritious? Never mind that each 4-ounce cookie has 362 400 calories. The label lists 180 to 200, but that's for half. And they're mostly white flour, sugar, and margarine. That's not baked nutrition. It's a give people an excuse to eat a giant cookie marketing ploy. Smart marketing? Supports healthy cholesterol levels, says the Smart Balance original label. Yes, but see the tiny already in the normal range below? That's a clue that Smart Balance can't promise to lower higher cholesterol. And hidden on the bottom of the tub is this. The right blend of fats may improve your cholesterol ratio when at least 2/3 of your fat intake comes from this product or a properly balanced diet. Who gets 2/3 of their fat from a spread? Smart Balance is better for your heart than butter, but it's got slightly more saturated fat, 2.5 grams per tablespoon, than some other spreads. Its saturated fat is plant-based. It comes from palm oil, but that's true for most spreads. And the 400 omega-3 ALA isn't the long-chain omega-3s you'd get from fish oil. Bottom line, Smart Balance isn't the best spread. It just has the best marketing. Spinach flavor wraps. No artificial flavors, says the bag of Mission Garden spinach herb wraps. No spinach to speak of either. There is some spinach powder after the white flour and shortening. It's part of the seasoning, along with onion powder, garlic powder, spices, oil, natural flavor, and blue and yellow dyes. That's why the wraps are green. People buy green wraps to get greens, not green-dyed food. Is Mission on a mission to fool us? No grill? Try this barbecue chicken recipe. From Kate Sherwood, the Healthy Cook. This crazy-looking combination of ingredients makes some of the tastiest barbecue chicken that never saw a grill. You'll want leftovers for salads and sandwiches. You can also spoon the mango salsa over fish or toss with black beans. Caribbean barbecue chicken with mango salsa. Time 20 minutes. Serves 8. Ingredients: 8 pitted prunes, 3 cloves garlic, 1/2 cup orange juice, 3 tablespoons reduced sodium soy sauce, 1 teaspoon red pepper flakes, 1 teaspoon ground allspice, 2 pounds boneless skinless chicken breasts, 2 tablespoons canola oil, and then mango salsa. In a blender, puree the prunes, garlic, orange juice, soy sauce, and spices. In a large zipper plastic bag, pound the chicken to an even 1/2 inch thickness. Pour the prune puree into the bag with the chicken and coat the chicken evenly. In a large nonstick pan, heat the oil over medium heat until shimmering hot. Sauté the chicken in 2 batches until lightly charred and cook through, 3 to 4 minutes per side. Top with mango salsa. Mango salsa ingredients: 2 cups chopped mango, 1 cup chopped cucumber, 1 cup cherry tomatoes, 1/4 cup cilantro, 1 jalapeno pepper seeded and minced, 2 tablespoons fresh lime juice, 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. Pulse all the ingredients in a food processor until minced. What happens to the extra calories when you overindulge? Ever wonder if fat cells just get bigger or if you actually gain more fat cells? To find out, researchers at the Mayo Clinic fed 23 lean young men and women 400 to 1200 extra calories a day by padding their diets with Snickers bars, milkshakes, and Boost Plus drinks. After 2 months, the volunteers had gained about 8 pounds, but that surplus got stashed in different depots. Almost all the weight gain in abdominal body fat was an increase in fat cell size, says Michael Jensen, director of the Obesity Specialty Council at the Mayo Clinic. In contrast, when people gained leg fat, they actually gained new fat cells. Jensen's earlier study estimated that when people gained 3.5 pounds of new leg fat, they acquired roughly 2.6 billion new fat cells. Next, Jensen had the participants spend 2 more months cutting calories and upping their exercise. The result? 6 of the 8 pounds disappeared. Everybody lost all or pretty much all of the abdominal, subcutaneous, and visceral fat they had gained, says Jensen. The only fat that they hadn't yet lost was some of the leg fat they had gained. So we concluded that it's easier to shrink fat cells back down to their original size than to make fat cells go away. Are you stuck with those fat cells forever? We don't know whether the new fat cells would have eventually gone away if people had kept off the weight long enough, says Jensen. Ironically, the leg fat that's hardest to lose is also the least harmful. And don't assume that you'll never gain new fat cells around your middle. If you gain enough weight, you have to make new fat cells, says Jensen. From an average small fat cell to the biggest of the big, it's about a four-fold increase in size. They can only get so big. This is What It's Like to Get Personalized Diet Advice by Caitlin Dow. I've noticed that my clothes are looser on my body, says Michelle H., one of the success stories on Habit.com. I feel better. I noticed that I have more energy. Is it worth $299 to take the Habit Nutrition Test, receive your test results, and get your nutrition plan? I decided to find out. Not sure what personalized nutrition is? The setup. First, I answered online questions about my height, weight, waist, blood pressure, and activity level. Then once the nutrition test kit arrived, I fasted for 12 hours. I swabbed the inside of my cheeks to collect DNA for the genetic testing. I pricked my finger and dripped blood onto a collection card so Habit could analyze the blood for my fasting blood sugar, cholesterol, and triglyceride levels. Next came the unique metabolic change to find out how my body handles fat, carbs, and protein. I gulped down Habit's sickeningly sweet challenge shake, which clocks in 950 calories, 18 teaspoons of added sugar, and more than a day's saturated fat. Erp. After 30 minutes, I stabbed another finger for blood, and 90 minutes later, I went for a third finger. Done. The results. A few weeks after I sent off my samples, an email popped into my inbox. Exciting new information about me was just a few clicks away, except it wasn't. Take the genetic test results. It turns out I have two high-risk variants of the FTO gene, which are more common in people who are overweight or obese. I'm neither. Be mindful of your genes, instructed Habit, without telling me how. I don't have the gene variants that make people lactose intolerant or sensitive to caffeine, reported Habit. I didn't need a genetic test to tell me that. I have four gene variants linked to high blood sugar. However, according to Habit, my response to the challenge shake was impressive. After 2 hours after the last gulp, my blood sugar was almost down to my fasting level. You handled the fat in the Habit Challenge shake with ease, said my results, apparently because the shake didn't make my triglycerides soar. However, your bad LDL cholesterol is high. At 107, my LDL was slightly above the 100 target. My fasting blood sugar, triglycerides, and good, or HDL, cholesterol were normal. No surprise, since my doctor had measured them recently. My nutrition plan. You are a range seeker, said Habit. Among the rules that should guide what I eat, you thrive on a wide variety of whole foods that are naturally nutrient-rich. Who doesn't? Due to how your body processes carbs, hidden sugars can have the wrong kind of impact. Don't they always? And weren't my blood sugar results impressive? With 30% of your calories from fat, enjoy nuts, plant-based oils, or other healthy options like avocados. True for everybody, no? You have the genotype associated with increased inflammation. Consuming more foods rich in vitamin C and vitamin E may be beneficial to you. May is right. It's not clear if C and E help. I don't know what Habit recommends for protein seekers, plant seekers, fat seekers, or its three other seekers, but the advice for range seekers is pretty generic. I also got a list of hero foods: Swiss chard, asparagus, quinoa, apples, eggs, tofu, almonds, olive oil, and kidney beans. Why kidney beans instead of, say, chickpeas? I asked a Habit dietitian. If you want to have chickpeas instead of kidney beans, that totally works, she replied. So much for personalization. And why did Habit give me targets, the usual recommended dietary allowances, for 12 vitamins and minerals, but no advice for calcium, iron, or sodium? The dietitian couldn't say. Habit declined my request to speak with a staff scientist. On the plus side, Habit's diet plan was loaded with fruits, vegetables, and other healthy foods. The advice may not be just for you, but at least it seems to be good advice. Exercise and bone health, it's hugely important, says this expert, by Bonnie Liebman. We talked on the phone with Bess Dawson Hughes, the director of the Bone Metabolism Laboratory at the Jean Meyer USDA Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University and a professor of medicine at Tufts, about what you can do to protect your bones. Here is what she had to say about exercise and bone health. Does exercise help bones? It's hugely important, both aerobic and strength training. Walking or running, any exercise in an upright position, is more effective for bones than swimming. They're all great exercises for muscle, but the ones that put a load on bones are better for the skeleton. Bicycling doesn't count as weight bearing, which is too bad because it's one of my favorites. What about exercises to improve balance, like Tai Chi? It's very effective at lowering the risk of falls. In one trial, elders who got balance training and then got coached to do it on their own at home had fewer falls over a one-year period. And there's a recent report in which they trained elders to multitask by telling them to walk this way and then that way while listening to music. The training had a favorable effect on falls. Why would multitasking matter? What causes so many falls is that people get distracted. Let's say an older woman is walking down the steps and her husband is up at the top asking her a question. She tries to answer it and she trips. The ability to multitask declines as we age, but you can improve it with training. Is exercise important for people who have osteoporosis? Yes, but some exercises might be harmful for people at risk for a vertebral fracture. They should ask their physicians which exercises to do. How much sodium do we salt our foods with at home? By David Shard. Did your physician suggest cutting back on salt after your blood pressure started creeping up? If you banished the salt shaker from your dinner table, that move alone probably wasn't enough. Researchers at the University of Minnesota and elsewhere have meticulously charted the sources of sodium in the diets of 450 representative adults living in Alabama, California, and Minnesota. The study was funded by the Centers for Disease Control. The volunteers recorded everything they ate and drank for 4 days and provided duplicate samples of the salt they added to food during cooking and eating. In some cases, they even turned in samples of their tap water. The result is the most detailed picture of the sources of dietary sodium in the U.S. diet in 25 years. Where the sodium came from. The men and women consumed an average of 3,501 milligrams of sodium from all sources. That's about 50% more than the recommended amount. Sodium in supermarket and restaurant foods accounted for 71% of the total amount of sodium in their diets. That was far more than the next biggest source, the sodium naturally found in food, which amounted to 14%. Next was the sodium added to foods prepared in the home, such as adding salt to boiling pasta, a daily average of about 200 milligrams or 6% of the total. Tap water, dietary supplements, and medications added less than 1%. The sodium added during meals at the dinner table? The 450 men and women in the study added a daily average of 170 milligrams, just 5% of the day's sodium. Store-bought foods and restaurant meals provided 14 times that much. So the salt shaker seems to have only a minor role in our sodium overindulgence. Other findings. The least amount of sodium consumed was by women, college graduates, the normal or underweight, and residents of California and Minnesota. Alabama residents added 3 to 4 times as much sodium to their food at the table as California and Minnesota residents. The lesson from this study. The sodium that we're getting in our diet is largely coming from processed foods and from foods we eat in a restaurant, says Wendy Post, an editor at the journal Circulation, which published the study. One way to deal with this is for patients to read food labels and to make smart choices when they are shopping for processed foods in the supermarket, she suggests. Another is for food manufacturers to decrease the amount of sodium in the products they are making. And restaurants should notify their clientele of what foods are potentially lower in sodium and calories. Sodium recommendations. The American Heart Association recommends that consumers should limit sodium to 2,300 milligrams a day, 1,500 milligrams for people with prehypertension or high blood pressure. The saltiest six foods based on earlier surveys? Bread and rolls, cured meats, pizza, poultry, soup, and sandwiches. Can multivitamins prevent a cold? By David Shard. The vitamins and selenium in one-a-day multivitamins support immunity, says Bayer, while the antioxidant vitamins in Centrum Silver help support the immune system, says Pfizer. Has Bayer or Pfizer tested its multivitamins to see if all that support keeps customers from getting sick? Nope. Perhaps that's because the companies are familiar with the results of three good studies conducted since 2002 in Canada, the Netherlands, and Scotland on a total of roughly 2,150 middle-aged and older men and women. Those who were given a standard daily multivitamin, one that supplied the daily DV, or daily value, for most vitamins and minerals, for at least a year got sick just as often as those who were given a placebo. And in the two studies that looked, the multitaskers were as likely to get just as sick and to remain sick for just as long as the placebo takers. It's possible that any benefit of taking a multivitamin would be dwarfed by other factors that influence whether or not someone gets sick, such as age, general health, or use of medications, says researcher Maria Sundaram, who studies vitamins and immunity at the Marshall Field Clinic Research Foundation in Wisconsin. What Not to Eat, Alcohol and Breast Cancer, by Bonnie Liebman. Alcohol is related to both premenopausal and postmenopausal breast cancer, says Walter Willett, chair of the nutrition department at the Harvard School of Public Health, and the more you drink, the higher your risk. Drinking over more of your life also matters. Women who started drinking earlier in life and then stop, their risk goes down, Willett explains. The highest risk is in women who started consuming alcohol early and continued. And it's not just women who overdo it. We now see a 17% increased risk with only one drink every other day, notes Willett. What's remarkable is how modest that amount is. With colorectal cancer, you don't see much increase in risk until you get to over two drinks a day. Alcohol's ability to raise blood estrogen levels appears to explain at least part of the increased risk. But we're still not entirely sure whether it's limited to the increase in estrogen or whether there's more to it than that, adds Willett. Could teenage drinking pose a particularly potent threat? That's been a worry from the beginning because the breast is more sensitive then, says Willett. When he and others tracked nearly 6,900 teens aged 13 to 20 for 5 years, each daily serving of alcohol they consumed was linked to a 50% higher risk of benign breast disease. Some types of benign breast disease are risk factors for cancer. So far, we haven't seen a massive time bomb due to teenage drinking, says Willett. But it does deserve some more looking. One of the Worst Ways to Start Your Day, by Jen Urban. Brunch has become more than just a meal. It's practically a cultural phenomenon. The Cheesecake Factory, Macaroni Grill, and TGI Fridays have been cashing in on the trend. Among the latest entrants, Maggiano's, and its Meatball Benedict mashup is a doozy. How can we enhance traditional brunch dishes by adding our own Maggiano's Italian-American twist? Asks the news release from Maggiano's corporate owners. What says Italian-American more than meatballs? And what twist beats the Meatball Benedict? Two English muffin halves, each topped with a meatball, tomato, and poached egg and hollandaise sauce, plus a generous side of fried potatoes? It's just one of the five decadent Benedicts on Maggiano's brunch menu. The others, chicken fricassee, smoked salmon and spinach, crab cake, and Nuski's smoked ham. Think of the Meatball Benedict as a foot-long Subway meatball marinara sub with cheese enhanced with half a stick of melted butter. Mmm. It's not easy to cram 1,480 calories and 52 grams of saturated fat, a 2.5-day supply, into one dish. But the hollandaise, mostly butter and egg yolks, sure helps. Bonus, thanks to the hollandaise and eggs, the Meatball Benedict also delivers 2.5 days worth of cholesterol. And think of its 3,400 milligrams of sodium, enough for today and half of tomorrow, as the chain's gift that keeps on giving. Say hello to brunch, says Maggiano's website, and say goodbye to your unscathed arteries. Why Sponges Are the Riskiest Item in Your Kitchen, by David Shard. Sponges are usually the dirtiest thing in the kitchen and difficult to keep clean, says microbiologist Manan Sharma of the United States Department of Agriculture's Food Safety Laboratory in Beltsville, Maryland. That was true in the NSF International Survey of U.S. homes, where 77% of the sponges and dishcloths contained coliform bacteria, 86% had yeast and mold, and 18% had staph bacteria. Coliform bacteria may indicate fecal contamination. NSF International is a nonprofit agency that sets safety standards for water filters and other equipment. Why are sponges so dirty? They come into contact with food residues that can build up in them and that provide nutrients for bacteria and other microorganisms to grow, explains Sharma. What's more, sponges are often wet and left in damp areas in or near the sink, which are ideal conditions for germs to multiply. They also have many nooks and crannies, which can be great places for germs to multiply, notes NSF microbiologist Rob D'Onofrio, who adds that sponges are typically not properly or regularly sanitized before their next use. Restaurant sponges. That's why the Food and Drug Administration's food code prohibits restaurants from using sponges to make the final wipe of surfaces that come into contact with food. A safe kitchen is a dry kitchen where there are no wet sponges and no wet towels for bacteria to grow overnight, says O. Peter Snyder, whose Hospitality Institute of Technology and Management in St. Paul, Minnesota, provides training for the food and restaurant industries in sound food-safe practices. How to clean your sponges? Just rinsing and squeezing out a sponge under running water is not going to do a whole lot, says Sharma. But microwaving your wet sponge for 1 minute gets rid of a significant portion of the bacteria. After Sharma and his colleagues at the USDA soak sponges for 2 days in a slurry of ground beef and soy broth, microwaving at full power for 1 minute was the most effective way of killing the bacteria in the sponges. Running them through the dishwasher killed almost as many bugs. Soaking them in 10% bleach, about twice as concentrated as household bleach, for 3 minutes or in lemon juice or water for 1 minute wasn't much better than doing nothing. A recent study by the Good Housekeeping Institute found that soaking sponges for 5 minutes in bleach was the most effective way of cleaning sponges. However, what the Institute did, mixing 3/4 of a cup of bleach in a gallon of water, may be more than what most people are willing to do. Don't try to microwave sponges that have metal in them, cautioned Sharma, and make sure the sponge is wet so it won't catch fire. If you don't want to go through all that to keep your sponges clean, your best bet is to keep a supply of clean dishcloths handy. Start out each morning with a fresh, dry one, and at the end of the day, toss the used cloth into the laundry hamper. That's all the time we have for Nutrition News. Until next time, I'm Jackie Roble for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired and readily available as a podcast after the initial broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.